A fighting fury, we're from Tigerland. In any weather, you will see us with a grin, risking head and skin. If we're behind, then never mind, we'll fight and fight and win, for we're from Tigerland. We never weaken till the final siren's gone.
Let's go. I'm reading a lot of those in the chat. That's why I did that. But welcome to the Monday Night Tiger Cast. I could see EJ bopping along to the song there in the background. No one else could, but I could down the bottom of the screen here. Hope everyone's doing well from wherever you are around the world. Welcome to the Tiger Cast for Monday, the 11th of August. We hope you're all doing very, very well. Jeez, we've got Hawk Tim already saying he's got news. You're going to have to share it now, aren't you? We'll get to that at some point. But gentlemen, hope you're all doing well. EJ, welcome.
G'day. I've got a bone to pick with the Tiger Cast. Oh. That's the wrong theme song. It says skin. I think you need to check that.
I think it was the only one I could rip off YouTube. I'll have to double check and see if the new one's up.
I'm trying to distract myself from the end of the game on the weekend. So that was what popped into my head.
No, fair call. I'll have to have a look back into that. Or I'll just try and use a different part of the song. Probably should get the intro properly done, though, to be fair. That was just me messing around on Canva. It's come out okay, to be fair, but I think we can definitely do better. Or if anyone watching is a guru at making video edits like intros, hit me up if you're wanting to piece something together for us. That'd be amazing because it would look a hell of a lot better than what I'm doing. Grok, welcome, mate. How's it going?
Yeah, going well. Sorry, I was a little bit late. Good to be back, obviously. I had wanted to be on last week, but I got called up for jury duty, and that ended up just being an absolute schmozzle, and I was just exhausted. So, yeah, I ended up falling asleep last week by like 6:30. I was just done with the day, so super early night. No, good to be back, especially after a loss. Don't have the bandwagon started.
Go on, EJ.
Someone was taking swings at me last week, right? Where are they?
Yeah. Cricket stuff is the official line. The cricket stuff. Hello. We're in footy season, and he's given us cricket stuff in August. Cricket season doesn't start till October, I'm pretty sure, if not later. But no, that's where CB's at. But. Oh, well, it is what it is. We've got a bit of it's not too much of a different show tonight, I shouldn't say that. But along with the usual stuff we do, I've got two videos that will play throughout the night. So one of them, I'm going to play Archie Daffy's highlight video from his APS game for Geelong from a couple of weeks ago, where he kicked 4 goals. It is now live on our YouTube channel, but I thought I would just play it through here so people can get a bit of a look. And then you can go rewatch it on YouTube and hit the like button. And the other video we've got at some point, probably more so earlier in the show, is I do the video analysis each week, and this week I did some analysis on our counterattacks in the last quarter that fell to pieces. So I'm going to roll some of that footage to get the thoughts of Grok and EJ as well. So that video is dropping tomorrow, so make sure you get around that too. But we'll have a look at them on here as well, so you can all cast your eyes over it and cast some thoughts around it too. But firstly, like we do most weeks, we haven't got long left, folks. The North Melbourne death ride chart is still looking okay. Now, it's come to my attention that I am going to be one square short to complete the whole season, which has really pissed me off. That I knew I was going to get close, but to realize that I'm going to have to either manipulate it or do something different for the last one is painful. But another loss, the Giants got the job done for us, taking the Kangaroos to 16 losses. Still got the second draft pick, and then it obviously sets the stage for this week, folks. The big game to see who's going to finish 16th or 17th. Now, I've seen a few tweets go out, gents, sort of already proclaiming that we're going to have pick 2 and 3. It's not done just yet. I know the likelihood of North Melbourne, I mean, they may well beat us. The likelihood of North Melbourne then beating Adelaide is probably slim. I would have felt a bit better about it had West Coast not just pushed Adelaide. It makes me just feel a little bit iffy about the Crows, but they might bounce back and they'll still need to win. It's looking nice seeing all that red though, EJ.
Yeah, you reckon North Melbourne have got a chance of beating Adelaide? Well, I've still got a chance of going on a date with Margot Robbie, but here we are.
All I'm saying is no one would have thought West Coast were a chance either, and up until late in the last quarter, they were thereabouts. But I take your point.
And your the fact that you're going to end up one square short, that your planning is as good as North Melbourne's draft planning.
I mean, I didn't map it out that well, did I? I just kind of ran with it and just hoped for the best. I'm like, oh, it looks about right.
Well, the chance of the future, the trade from last season, just lacked long-term vision.
Lacked foresight? Yeah. No, can somebody spare a square? Very good. Good Seinfeld reference.
The thing about it is, yes, we're going to get picks 2 and 3, which will be picks 3 and 4 because the AFL will look after West Coast with the Allen thing. But picks 3 and 4 is still good. And it doesn't always fall your way, but we've backed North Melbourne to not improve again. They backed themselves to improve. So they've paid a premium for a bloke that isn't as good as our tools anyway.
And that, to your point, EJ, that, yeah, it's about, for North Melbourne, it was all about taking a gamble on themselves and it hasn't quite paid off. I still think Grock, if you look at the whole season, even though we've got more wins than them currently, I still really do feel like they've probably played better footy than us for a lot of the year as well, but just haven't been able to convert the wins when we've been able to, which has been good. But it's looking like, you know, we got laughed at a little bit with our reaction on draft night, but it looks like we might have the last laugh.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it. Yeah, you could probably say that North Melbourne have played better footy than us, but I feel like we've performed better against more of the top sides. Obviously, we knocked Gold Coast off. We pushed Collingwood. It was really only the last quarter, things like that. Whereas you look at North Melbourne's wins against us, Carlton, West Coast, the Lions draw, which was pretty good, and Melbourne are all over the shop. They haven't really beaten anyone of note. So, again, I think the gap between North's best and worst is still ridiculously, like, the expanse is massive, particularly under 3 years into Clarko's reign. So I think they really have to load up this year because I think next year is the make or break season for Clarko. If he performs again like this next year, I think the club will pull the pin on him because 4 years in and having no tangible development or improvement, whether that be wins or losses or competitiveness, I think they're in real strife next year if things stay the same.
And they've blooded a couple of youngsters over the weekend, and it's going to be interesting because this week, again, it's going to be both teams' grand final, EJ, which I know we'll talk about a bit later when we talk about the game, but you feel like this is both teams' one last big crack to try and jag that extra win for the year.
Yeah. And I'm, it could all go pear-shaped, but I'm really confident at the moment that I think we'll get the chocolates. I think someone else in the comments has said that our defence is so, so solid. I mean, if we didn't have the setup we had down back, we would be in a lot worse position this year. You know,
absolutely.
Miller, Young, Vlosten, Broad, Trainer in parts, Banks off a half back flank, Short after his injury. We've been really solid down back.
And they've shown they can defend well against top four sides as well. I know some sides have kicked away just with weight of numbers, but typically speaking, that we have defended quite well. And the fact that we can have games as ugly as it might be where teams are scoring 60 or 50 points and we're still a chance to win it just sort of shows how good we are defending, despite how ugly the game can actually look sometimes. But we'll talk about North a bit more after. We will chat about the St Kilda game first and foremost. It was a bit of an annoying one, Grock, I reckon. The Saints won by 4 points, 7-10-52 to 8-8-56. The first quarter was pretty shithouse from everyone involved, but what I actually liked was I actually really enjoyed our response after quarter time from a adjustment perspective. The Saints were really chipping it around well. We were defending way too deep and they were just working it up the ground and we were giving up so much territory. And it was pretty well noted on a lot of socials about that as well. So to see the coaches and the players be able to identify it, work out a fix and then execute it the next quarter, I think was a really good progressive sign, albeit this was our more experienced team for the year, I think. But from then on, I actually thought we controlled the game quite well. It was just our lack of finishing.
Yeah, especially that last quarter, especially, I think we wasted a lot of chances and made a lot of crucial mistakes. McIntosh, a couple of them, you know, I've been a fan of McIntosh, but that was probably the worst game he's played in as long as I can remember. You know, Seth Campbell missed an easy shot around the corner that he would normally take. You know, a couple of forwards got in each other's way and spoiled what should have been a, you know, uncontested mark. It was just everything that could go wrong did go wrong in that last quarter for us.
Yeah.
But the second and third quarters, I thought we did really well. Again, the main concern that we have is when you play a heavy pressure game like we do, where we need to press, tackle, harass, if we're not manning up on the direct opponents and allowing them uncontested marks, we cannot do anything. And 144 uncontested marks to St Kilda was where the game was won for them. They denied us the pressure. They didn't go long down the line, which is, you know, why I've lost, and I thought had probably his quietest game for the year. Mm. Didn't really do much. I didn't see him intercept anything. It was Miller that did it. So I think St Kilda came in. They identified where they could pick us apart, and that they did it pretty easily. But yeah, I thought just the fight back from a couple of the young players. I thought Miller and Young in particular had very, very good games. I was actually at the game. I didn't get to watch the replay. I was filthy after that last quarter, and I refused to actually watch the replay when I got home. But yeah, I thought some of the younger players did well. I thought some of the older players had some poor moments. But again, it's one of those ones where we'll rule it, but we'll look at the we'll look at what we could fix up and hopefully implement better against North.
EJ, what was your take on the game?
Oh, look, Ross Lyon's a very smart coach, you know. He's a mature coach, and it took us a while to adjust. I saw lots of good signs from, as we're talking about, the young players, even some players that played a half of really good football and then inexplicably disappeared. But I thought Ross was excellent. I thought that was his best game for a long time, like a really good game. And although I'm quite adamant and vehement that he is not a forward, I thought given the personnel issues we had, that Bolter had a very good, very effective game. You can still see he just hasn't got the brain to be a forward, but he's so athletic, and that alone is something that Lynch doesn't have anymore. So that mobility and that power and the spring, all that sort of stuff, Lynch doesn't possess.
Yeah.
Lynch has got the brain. He just doesn't have the body to do it anymore.
His body can't
do it. Bolter doesn't have the brain, but boy, has he got the body. If we can do some sort of Frankenstein shit in the off-season and take Tom's brain out and put it into Bolter, A, he won't smack people, and B, you know, he could be a really useful forward. So,
yeah, I agree. I think his athleticism and his competitiveness is vital for us up front for now. And I reckon it's going to be for next year too, to be totally honest, because of the reason you said that Lynch can't do it. I would
be disappointed if that happened.
And it's makeshift. It's not five or 6 years worth. It's just until the other guys can kind of catch up a little bit more.
But if we've got McKelty and Lynch as mature bodies and you've got Fall, Sims and Armstrong, if we're playing Bolter forward in that setup, I'd be disappointed, right? I get the idea that Young and Miller are looking really good down back, and so the question was put, you know, well, why would you put him down there with those two? Someone else on Twitter put up a suggestion, and I don't know if he's got the dedication to do it, but I would love to see it, and that would be Bolter on a wing.
Mm.
He's got the athleticism. He's got the physical size, which is even bigger than McIntosh. He loves to hurt people. He'd be a great link. Yep.
Bolterstein. There we go. Jeff's nailed it. Well done, Jeff. Good call. Bolterstein.
Yeah.
Your win call's not a bad one. And I've always maintained, Grok, that I think Bolter would play his best football when it's more instinctive and chaotic. And I think the wing maybe allows that a little bit more frantic and using, just unleashing him a little bit, I think. we kind of, it feels like we're trying to contain a beast or a caged animal when he's playing in defense. And I don't know whether that sometimes causes wires crossed in confusion, but I definitely wouldn't be against seeing him on the wing.
Yeah, I think Bolter plays his best when he can actually attack the contest. He looks his best when the ball's in the air and he gets a run and jump and can intercept as a defender, or especially going through the middle as the second ruckman and the ball's in dispute, he's pretty good below his knees. It's when he has to be accountable for a forward or an opponent. That's where I feel like he gets stuck in two minds, sort of like an early Rants, where he doesn't know whether to impact the contest or be accountable, and he sort of does neither. He does neither, and sort of gets caught out of position several times. But I like him as the forward at the moment, being able to attack the ball. One, it gives us a bigger body, a more experienced player. But two, it means he can push up the ground and get involved as well.
And I think he provides a good bit of a link man from back line to forward line. And he's actually quite good at ground level too. Like the way he fought for that contest when the ball was, he was paddling it around in front of Taru or whatever. I know one's very experienced, one's very inexperienced, but it was a good little battle to watch, to be honest. And I think that's a big thing that he offers, similar to what Jonty and Armstrong do, to be fair. But I think Bolter's got them covered for speed a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. He's really mobile, and he's clean when the ball's on the deck, which it makes him sort of the prototype player in a way that he can do it all. He's fantastic, Mark. He's a booming kick. He's athletic. He's quick. He's clean below his knees. It's just, it hasn't really clicked for him over the course of a season. Like, he's had really good patches early on where he's played probably 15 or 16 really good games and then some so-so, but he hasn't hit that stage. And it's about this time now where you'd expect him to be hitting his prime, but he's been a victim of being able to play almost anywhere, and he hasn't really settled in a position. And I think, 8 or 9 years into his development now, it's really coming back to bite us in the butt a little bit, where we're still asking ourselves, where is his best position? And fortunately, you know, bigger brains than ours are the ones that have to decide that, but it's going to be fascinating.
I like this one, EJ from Hunt. Our Dan Curtin. Dan Curtin's a man mountain who tore us to shreds on the wing for the Crows. And I wouldn't mind seeing it. And I think there's probably a vacant wing spot, to be honest, to try it in.
I think that sort of weekend, as Grock pointed out, you know, like, it's probably the nail in the coffin for someone like McIntosh. The reason I like him coming from behind the ball is someone leads him there, so he doesn't have to make the decision as to which way he goes. Whereas when he has to go and not be responsible for someone, I think he second guesses himself sometimes, but then gets in the wrong spot, but then athletically gets out of it. I like the idea of someone being near him, but look, the great thing about this is that we have a lot of key backs, mm-hmm. and we haven't even talked about Gibkus, right?
Yep.
We've got a lot of key forwards. We've got at least four, McKelty, Lynch. We've got five, McKelty, Lynch, Sims, Armstrong, four. We've got loads of backs. So
there's an oversupply. Well, up front.
He's definitely best 23. So, yep. You know, the old-fashioned swing man is not a bad thing to have.
It's definitely a good selection headache. And it's one that I think Tiger supporters will discuss for the next 5 or 7 months during pre-season until we hear about where he's training and what he's going to play like. I just think at the moment that we would be silly to try and break up the Miller-Young combo that seems to be working so well for us at the moment. Yeah.
Just while we're touching on the forwards, it was refreshing to see, and I know he was really inaccurate, but Lynch actually finally getting some umpiring decisions go his way, especially after the last game he played, and we actually voiced our concerns. I think he got 2 or 3 free kicks in contest because he was getting pushed out of it. He wasn't getting those.
What, he also went to the supermarket and bought a tub of mayo, though. My goodness me.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I was surprised. Not the one where Caminiti, like, literally pushed him sideways, but the other one on the far sort of on the far flank. I thought that one he really could have held his ground, and I was really surprised it got paid. But happy days.
Yeah, I thought he fought well at contest too. He had even a good sort of second, third effort chase and later tackle and applied some pressure. And maybe that's a result of him having 5 weeks off and being a bit fresher. But yeah, I thought that side of it was good. I still really don't like Tom Lynch being the man on the mark. And we saw when Nasiah was taking the kickouts, and this is smart by obviously Ross Lyon as well, but Nasiah taking the kickouts, plays on, and he's past Lynch in the blink of an eye. And we just got lucky that he got pinged for running too far. But it's not just Nasiah. Any player with a relevant amount of speed is going to burn past Lynch, who's on the mark, and they've got the ball 75 metres down the field in about 2 seconds, and that's not good for our setup at all.
Michaels, did you say any player with a relevant amount of speed?
Or any amount of speed. You're right.
Any player with an irrelevant amount of speed.
Yeah, true, true. And it's the scary part, isn't it? Like, I think when it comes to that part of the game, we need to have him set back further in the zone and have a Mansell, a Green, whoever, on the mark. But speaking of Steely Green, thoughts on him not being subbed on? There's been a lot of speculation about the tanking word. I don't think that was that whatsoever, to be honest. But it was definitely interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, I hated it personally. Looking back, I think keeping him as the unused sub was the wrong decision, especially in the last 10 minutes where we had several chances with the ball going over the top into space and we just didn't have the leg speed to get there. Steely Green would have made all the difference in that that instance. And I think someone, again, like McIntosh probably should have been the one that was subbed out, especially probably three-quarter time when his game was probably a 3 out of 10 before it dropped to the 1.5 or 2 that it ended up being. I really didn't like that, especially, again, how the game ended. I just think Steely's speed and pressure would have really helped. And he's really clever at shutting space down as well on defensive transition, and probably would have stopped maybe some of the easier marks that the Saints took.
Yep.
Hey, Jay, how'd you feel about Steely not taking any part in the game?
Oh, I think it's poor. I think I can't agree with anything more than what Grok said. You know, whether it be McIntosh, whether it be someone like Sonsi who just disappeared at halftime, whether it be Trisize who tried hard all day but had a stinker, which is okay because he's played some good football, so I'm not hanging the bloke for it. But there were plenty of targets that you could have taken off at three-quarter time and said, righto, let's inject a bit of freshness into the game. Yeah, I'm with Grok 100%.
What was interesting was the wording of Uze post-game. It sounded like that in his mind that the sub was only going to be used if Mansell was still proppy on an injury front. I'm like, okay, but what about the tactical side of it? Why didn't we pull the trigger in that space? It was really interesting. And look, I do think it would have made a difference to how we were playing, but I mean, there were still other things we should have done better despite that. But to inject pace and speed would have been handy. He did end up playing in the twos, Travis. He did make the trip down the highway, grab some subway on the way. I think he missed a bit of the first quarter, but came on a little bit after. And yeah, it would have been good to have had him out there. But yeah, I suppose what's done's done. Now, before I show some footage about some of these counterattacks that we fluffed at the end, just to make everyone really
mad. Let me get another drink.
Yeah, I want to shout out Ryan Mansell's game. Bizarre reason, I was seeing people criticize his game, and I don't know whether we're all watching the same game or not. But 17 disposals, 2 goals, 5 marks, 7 tackles, which I think was team high. And not to mention the type of goals he's kicking from tight spots when we're going through patches where we can't kick regular goals. I thought that was one of his better games for a while, Ryan Mansell. I thought he was really good.
Got votes off me.
Yeah, he got votes off me. The other thing that is overlooked is being at the game, Mansell was the one that was responsible for Nass. And if you actually have a look at the stats, yes, he kicked a goal. Nass kicked a goal from a freakish bounce. It was Angus Monfries like that break. But he, Wanganeen Malira had 67% defensive half. Like that was his time on the ground. He only had about 30% in the forward half. And people like, well, you know, you should have put someone on Nass. Well, for us to be able to, you know, block him in for nearly 70% game time in the defensive half for St Kilda, that goes a long way. If we had have even let that drift out to 45 or 50%, we probably lose by a lot more. Because even though he only had the 37% or whatever it was inside forward 50 in the forward half, he still had 7 score involvements from the 9 disposals, which was nuts. And he had the 3 goal assists. So, yeah, again, I think people are underestimating the effort that we did put into Nass to limit his influence. Because being at the game, I didn't really notice him until probably the last 10 minutes of the last quarter. I was surprised to see that he had over 30 disposals. I thought, you know, he had a really quiet game just being at the game and watching.
But I would say that 60% of his disposals ended up coming from playing on from kick out. I really, for the first half, we nailed that really well. It felt like we tapered off in the second half. Dion Prestia was minding him quite a bit around stoppages, which was interesting. And I thought it was a really good team defense, I felt. And look, I know there's a lot of talk about should we have hard tagged Nass in the last quarter. I really don't think it would have made too much difference because we were still playing our own game relatively well. And we just, we let ourselves down, EJ, I think is the story of the day. And I'll bring up some of this footage. Now, it's going to stop start, and I apologize that I'm in the top corner as well, but it's a video that's coming out tomorrow, so that's why. But I've muted it, so you don't have to hear me talk in the video because that playing twice. But so this first one here, we've got a free kick and advantage in the middle, and Nank, which is astonishing in itself. So Nankervis does get advantage and will play on quickly. And this is right after St Kilda kicked a couple of goals to get within, obviously, a point of us. And there's just a couple of, there was probably one option in particular that we probably should have gone with. And it's pausing it there. So Nank's, I think he's looked left at the umpire to see if it was advantage us. Yep. But if you look at where, I think it might be Sonzi or Jack Ross, this player there. They are in a world of space once this keeps rolling because Nasiah actually peels off to get to Nankervis. And what Nank does is he actually just blast kicks it inside 50 once it rolls forward fractionally as he kicks it there. So, yeah, you can see there the preferred option there should have been, I think, a handball over the top to the player loose. And they've got, what's that, 10, 15 metres of space in front of them plus to then go and have a bit more of a meaningful inside 50 entry. But it ends up just going long and then St Kilda kill the contest, which is not much fun. The second one, which will load. So this one is we actually turned this ball over from the back half. So Nathan Broad did some really good work from the back half reading this kick that was coming in. And as he counter-attacks out, so he's given the ball to Tim Taranto here in the middle with a nice little handball. And again, Sonzi out wide in plenty of space. And as Tim Taranto starts to run forward with the ball a bit, he actually, the space opens up a bit more over the back. But unfortunately, it was another decision where Taranto decided to bomb it forward. I'm trying to scroll to the right point in time. Where is it? So they're at the point of kicking. Would you agree that the option probably should have been to flick that one out wide or even a handball or a kick over the top here?
Yep, to the guy again, on the circle.
Yeah, so I'm cursoring on the wrong screen. So I think the option over the top to any of those two would have been the preferred option. I get this is all happening under pressure, but if you look at Taranto, there's no one directly on him applying serious heat. But he kicks it forward to Mantle in a one-on-one, loses the contest, and then St Kilda clean up. So that's another forward 50 entry we probably should have done a little bit better in, which was a bit frustrating.
That was a simple, like, 20-meter over-the-top kick or even handball into space to allow them to run.
Yeah. Now, this is bonus footage. This is Tyler Young. I just wanted to highlight how good this was. He does the first kick, gets the handball received. Look at that kick that he pulls off into the middle of the ground. It's because it's screen share, Eons, that it does reduce the quality in screen share. But that kick in the middle of the ground, and then Tyler Young goes again and kicks to a one-on-one. I thought Tyler Young, he has come a long way, EJ, with him backing himself and his skills, as has Miller. I think it's been one of the highlights of the year, to be honest.
Yeah, 100%. I'm just looking at all these people in the open, hands up.
Now, this last one, this is the one that hurts the most. This was late in the game. I thought we were going to give away a free kick first and foremost, but we didn't. The counter-attack's on. We have got a shitload of space. So this is like right in the last 3 minutes of the game. You've got Ross with the ball. I think it's Taranto in front of him, Seth Campbell further ahead. St Kilda players are flat-footed and nowhere near us. Now, to be fair, I think this is, who's the player? It might be Garcia, who does a really good chase. So Rossi gives it off. Taranto, this kick here is the killer. You look at what's ahead of us here. I mean, the first one, it should have been a handball to Seth Campbell almost instantaneously. Noah Bolter's in a ridiculous amount of space with the defender actually running away from him. So even a kick to Bolter with a margin for error could have been marked. Tom Lynch,
even the player in the center, that defender's running away from them as well.
Yeah, so Tom Lynch is semi-leading up towards the kicker, so that could have been another lead-up mark. But instead, he's trying to hit this patch of space out here for Mansell to run onto in a very low percentage type kick. And to be fair, like the St Kilda player, I think it was Garcia, closed down the space really well. But that needed to be just an easy handball off to, I think, Seth Campbell first and foremost. And obviously the rest is history.
There's also, I think that's Ross next to him. He could have just absorbed that tackle and dished off just before, and then Ross has got the easy run into 50 as well. There were three or four options, and he picked none of them.
No, that, exactly right. So that's probably a little bit disappointing. Is this the decisions? And again, I don't want it to feel like they were picking shit on certain players, but it was senior players that probably let us down in those key moments, and I guess... We probably have a higher level of expectation from senior players to execute those moments better. And that's the difference between, you know, even sides that are 14th, 13th, 12th, for example, I think would have executed that part better than what we did.
Yep.
So for me, that's the thing that we need to be addressing most heavily this offseason, is our connection front of centre to make sure that we don't fall into the same trap again. But it was interesting to highlight some of those.
Okay, but I'll put the positive spin on this.
Yes.
At the start of the year, we wouldn't have pulled the trigger and gone through the middle like that.
Fair call.
I was just about to say that myself. Like, yes.
It is a progressive step.
It was the execution that let us down. The fact that we went long and quick is what we've been screaming for the last 18 weeks. And it just didn't happen this week. We tried it. You could see what they were trying to do, but it was just wrong, just poor decision making in the end that killed us.
And look, I think that's an easy fix as well, the execution side of it. And I think as we get better as a team and grow as a team, I think we will be able to rearrange that and fix that up. But that were probably the moments that I think cost us the game essentially. I don't think the sub did, although it would have helped, or the Naz non-tag late in the game. But, unfortunately, it is what it is. We'll chat.
As Tubby Josh has pointed out, we are ranked number 4 in the comp in the last 10 weeks in the transition from D50 into forward 50. But I think we're ranked 18th once we get there, right?
Yeah.
So the transition is happening. Now it's about converting. So the numbers are actually starting to stack up.
We are doing a lot of really good things from turnover in the back half and moving it up the ground. It's just that final sector of the ground, we just have nothing in terms of connection. And
Andrew had a good point too. Wait until we get Lawler back as the deliverer inside 50.
There's that too. Yeah. There's that too. There's plenty of things we can improve. But to your point earlier, EJ, 100% right, that's been a massive difference of how we attacked earlier in the season. We didn't really attack the corridor as much earlier in the season. To seeing that kind of transpire now is good. It's a positive step forward, and now we just got to build on that with the last part. But I just thought that was interesting. But we'll chat about the VFL quickly as well, because the VFL, importantly, had a good win against the Zebras, 115-74 by 41 points. And that's pretty much secured us a spot in the wild card slash finals for the VFL. There's one more game left and we can't be dislodged from the top 10, which is good. And we've done it again with a fairly depleted side, to be honest, because of the injury stacking up and the shuffling of deck chairs. Now, I don't know. I think you've both seen the game or at least the stats, but if everyone was to have had a bet at the start of the game on who would have had equal high disposals, I'm guessing that none of us would have said Kaczynski. But he had a monster game. For those who didn't see it, 26 disposals, 4 goals won, 5 marks, 25 hitouts, 8 clearances. And even just if you remove the numbers and you're just watching it visually, he was smashing it. It was an unbelievable game. And if there was a spot available to come into AFL this week, you would have no hesitation in putting him in. It was a really, really good game.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I didn't watch any of the game. I saw a couple of highlights, but... yeah, that was a very, very good game. And his last, I'd say, probably month of football at VFL level has been really, really solid. Obviously, he earned the call-up for a couple of games up forward at AFL level. But at VFL level, he is far and away our best forward at the level right now.
Yeah, I thought he was great, EJ.
Yeah, 100%. And Peter Ourakis is right. We're focused on the defensive setup, so everything builds from the defense. But Cozzy was awesome. I actually watched a fair bit of the VFL for the first time this season. He's not an AFL listed player, but down back, that El Moore was monstrous.
He's good here. I think he's got to end up on an AFL list. I don't think it's ours, unfortunately. And that's going to be another one that people will probably revert back to at some stage in the future. But we've just got too many players in the same spot. But he reads the game well, doesn't he, EJ? Takes some nice marks, makes some good decisions. I think most weeks that we watch the VFL, people point him out, like, why isn't he on a list? I think he'll get looked at.
Yeah, I think he'll get a slot, and he deserves it. He's been good all season, but I particularly thought on the weekend, like, he stood out more so than Blight. It was like he was in control. So...
I mean, watch Essendon take him. They need defenders, and he's a Richmond VFL player. I mean, it's a match made in heaven.
Oh, it's a natural fit. natural
then they can on-sell him to Hawthorne at a discount.
Yeah. D'Ambrosio, yeah, that's right. And the cycle continues. Sam Grill played another game with us as well, who's the under-18 from Oakley Chargers, who is, I guess, in calculations for us to be drafted. He had 15 disposals, 2 marks, 3 tackles, show some good pace. Someone made a really good, an interesting point in the VFL live that this is, I don't want to say tinfoil hat, but you'll understand why I maybe alluded to it. Do we bring in players like that to play in our VFL to throw others off the scent? And it was said because last year we had Finn O'Sullivan, Harvey Langford and Jagger Smith all play in our VFL and we didn't take any of them. I thought it was a really interesting comment, but it was really awesome to see Grill having another game, and you could tell from the comments from the week before that Jake Batchelor loves him and loves what he brings to the team. And yeah, he seems to fit in quite well at the level, and no doubt he will be a consideration for a top end pick.
Yeah, I mean, you can throw Dunkley and Oliver as players who've gone through there as well, and we haven't picked up as well. So we haven't had first rounders playing for us and not picking them. But from what I've heard, and I haven't, before anyone asked me if I've got any updates on trade or draft, I still haven't heard anything since my last update, but that Grilla is one of our targets that are right in the mix for our pick. We really do like him as the halfback, almost like a Jaden Short replacement going forward.
So we did play halfback. Yeah.
He comes to Richmond and we don't nickname him George, I'll be disappointed.
The George Foreman Grill?
Yes.
Surely. Got to get that. Got to get that nickname. But no, he looked really good. He looked really good. So he will be in the mix. But well done to the VFL team. Mixed is a good nickname as well. Well done, Nuclear Days. It's a nice one too. Mixed Grill. That also works. But I couldn't help, while watching the VFL, the one thing I was trying to work out in my own head is, okay, we've now locked ourselves into VFL finals, which is great, and it's a credit to Jake Batchelor and the program, but what players have we got potentially coming back into that side even once the AFL season's done. So McKelty Lefau is going to be back. Fawcett's going to be back. Hayes Brown will be back. At a bit more of a stretch, you got Campbell Gray and McAuliffe. They might be very touch and go, but they're kind of in the mix. Jasper Elga's going to come back. And then there was question marks on, is Trezise eligible? Rioli might either just be eligible or just miss out of being eligible. I think Sonzi might be past being eligible now. Tash Houghton could be eligible, maybe with a permit if we wanted him to. Josh Gibkiss will be down there as well. So there's going to be some big names coming back to replenish that VFL side, which makes for an exciting finals tilt for the boys.
It's going to be interesting.
Just so the question without notice, would anyone be happy for Tash Houghton to be playing more footy in the VFL finals to get finals type exposure?
Yep.
You would? You both would?
Yeah. You can't wrap them in bubble wrap.
I agree.
Yeah, after this season, the more that we can get into him to strengthen and get him fit and running right through the preseason, I think if we can, we definitely do it. Him and Gibkiss, I think, are the two that we get as many games into as possible, and Lefau.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'd be playing in both. The more exposure, and I know it's VFL level, but I know people say you shouldn't, you know, play Lamborghinis and all that kind of shit, but they're not playing at Beaconsfield in finals, right? They're playing on proper quality grounds. As Peter said, he's a match winner, and I think you have your class in there, and it's a good learning for him no matter what. Gibkiss has been doing okay as well, EJ. I know we've all been fans of Josh Gibkiss. My only, I don't want to say a concern, but I guess from a comparison perspective, we saw a chunk during his return of Tyler Young that his numbers, he was shooting lights out and was, you couldn't not pick him to play AFL football. We haven't quite got to that area yet for Gibkiss, but I don't know if he's being asked to play a slightly different role to what Young was playing and if he's ticking all the right boxes that he just needs to tick. I still have this gut feel he might get a game, though, against the Cats.
Yeah, I think also with Gibkiss, it's like Young did an ACL and came back, right? Gibkiss has had the massive hamstring issues and the ACL. I just think it's a slower build, right? And this is all about next year more than this year. If he plays a game, fantastic. But I'm not concerned about the lack of numbers or, you know, he's not shooting the lights out. I think this is long-term plan, and I love the way that we're taking it slow.
Yeah. John's nailed it there. I mean, you made the comparison, but 12 months off as opposed to nearly two and a half years is massive. And you also have a look, the two leg injuries, the ACL and the hamstring, Gibkiss looks like he doesn't fully trust himself to go 100% yet. And that's going to come once he gets the strength and conditioning in on a proper off season. Once he does that, I think if we're still seeing him being a little bit timid by January or February, then I'd start to be a little bit concerned. But he's earned probably 3 or 4 months of grace period to work himself back.
For sure. No, I think that's a fair enough call. It's just good to see him out there, honestly, and getting through game after game and getting involved. So I think that's the most important part, and he'll be another one that'll be benefit playing in finals too. I think that's going to be good for him and for the VFL program, which would be good. The other thing we'll do quickly is I do have a highlights reel together of Archie Daffy, who's a father-son 2026 prospect, assuming that father-son doesn't get scrapped in the foreseeable future, which I know there's been some talk about. However, I'd be okay with it if it got scrapped next year, if it means that Carlton lost Cody Walker. That would be highly entertaining. But that's a different story for a different day. So this video is from Archie Daffy playing for Geelong in the APS against Wesley. This is a couple of weeks ago, and he had 4 goals, 16 disposals. He's wearing the number 7 in the green jumper. So it only goes for about 4 minutes, but I'll mute the video and we'll let it roll so you boys can have a look at his highlights and pass off any comments or whatever that you might have on young Archie. But It's good to see him getting amongst it. So he takes this next kick here. But he's starting to turn a few heads this year. So he's on the younger side of the underages as well. I think he's about 10 months behind a lot. So he's got a lot of scope and a lot of improvement still yet to come next year. He's played some Coates under-18s games for Geelong Falcons as well. But APS, as we all, I think, know, APS takes priority over Coates League. So it's a pretty lengthy season. So all of his games have been there. But he also played for Vic Country in the Futures trial game, which happened over the weekend. So haven't seen that game yet. I'm waiting to hear a bit more about it. And there's no stats to be found anywhere, which is a little bit annoying. But yeah, young Archie's doing okay. And Dan, to your point, he does get called Duck in these games. So his teammates have already given him the Duck nickname. But any thoughts on, I mean, you might have already seen bits and pieces of him anyway in the past, but
it's funny. I actually watched this maybe 10 minutes before I actually jumped on tonight. And the one thing that I like is he's a forward player. He doesn't go sideways with his disposal. He'll go long and he'll go quick. The one question I have is, the one question mark that I saw watching this is he's got a propensity to just bomb the ball forward without looking. I think he did it like 3 or 4 times out of contests that I saw, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. At AFL level, you're going to have representation up forward when the ball gets in there. But again, it's just if he can just lower his eyes a little bit and not bomb, yeah, he looks a really likely type.
So I don't know much about how he would be faring in the rankings for next year. I think it's probably still a little bit early to tell all that kind of stuff. But it's just nice to have some father-son prospects coming through. The only other one I don't know much about recently is Jack Lees. He's kind of fallen off the radar a little bit in terms of, I don't think he's played since about mid-July. So and there's actually someone else wearing the number, or listed as wearing the number 6 now for Woodville. So I'm not too sure what happened or what's happened there. So if anyone's got any insight, feel free to let us know. But yeah, I think this might be his one of the final goals. He gets the match winning goal too. So that's just not a bad clearance inside 50. But yeah, he's starting to play as an inside midfielder as well, which is interesting. A bit of a progression from the small forward. This is the final goal that he kicks here. Pushes forward and lovely pick up. A bit of a banana on the run. Gets the goal. So yeah, this is a bit of a highlight reel for Archie Daffy, who's someone to keep an eye out for 2026. Tanner Armstrong, I don't have any fresh updates there, but it sounds like he's been going well. I don't have fresh updates by way of video, but the last few stat lines I saw, he did okay. And Callaway's still doing right as well, gents. I think he's going to get looked at a bit higher than what people think, Louis Callaway.
Yeah. I don't know enough, I'll be honest.
He does a lot really well without having one ridiculous standout trait. But
I could see him going anywhere from sort of in the 25 to 40 range.
I feel that's like, about right too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems about the mark, but anyway, we get a look at some father sons in the coming years. But this week, it's all about who is going to finish with pick number 2. Are we going to have our pick 2, or are we going to have North Melbourne's pick 2? Obviously, we would rather the latter.
Yeah. I mean, who's going to end up with pick 2? Richmond. It doesn't matter which way it falls; we'll end up with it.
It ultimately doesn't, but it would be nicer to have have North Melbourne's one just for the lulz, but. It's going to be one of those games, like we said at the start, gents, that both teams will be gearing themselves up for and treating it like their grand final, for lack of a better word. You know, similar to the Saints game, EJ, it's a game we must be going into believing we're a chance to win. We obviously had a really close game against them earlier on in the year. That was a really contested, full-on, brutal battle. Maybe it's going to look something similar. I don't know if the weather in Tassie plays a bit of a different role there. They're missing Nick Larkey, which is a massive out for them. They get Paul Curtis back. But to your point earlier in the show, EJ, I think that our defensive six should still be able to hold the fort against their forward line, which is consisting of, I think Costanti's going to be out as well with concussion, so he won't be there. Trem Barth will be in for his second game.
Probably a positive for North.
Yeah. So Trem Barth will be down there for his second game. He looked pretty lively last week, to be honest. Powell Sheasel was named at forward pocket, but he's not going to play forward pocket. Jack Darling. So pretty much Jack Darling and Zerha, I feel, are going to be the bigger players for us matchup-wise. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, it would. And Jack Darling moves so badly that what I would do is I was Richmond, I'd play Lynch at fullback on Jack Darling. It'd be like two Easter Island statues standing there and not moving.
Nil or draw.
Yeah. Oh, look, so I think we're really well set up down back to combat whatever North throw at us. I think in the midfield we've got – well, okay, from the weekend we just had, I really like the fact that we had a different mix in the midfield.
Yes, there's some different players in there.
Yeah, we did. The CBA numbers, Sonzi got quite a few more, you know. Campbell was in there. It was a bit fresher, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we can even lose the midfield battle and win the game, that's how confident I am in our defence standing up to their forward line. I don't want us to get smashed in the middle, but we could moderately lose the midfield battle and still win the game because I think our defence is much better prepared for what's coming than what North is.
Okay, yeah. So my question for you, Grock, for you to carry on with your other assessments, we actually beat St Kilda in the midfield last week statistically from a clearance perspective. Do you think that North Melbourne's midfield is better or bats deeper than St Kilda's, or should we be able to... I mean, Luke Davies Jr. looked really good on the weekend. Wardlaw's not a bad player. Colby McKercher did some good things as well. Do you think we have what it takes to match them in the guts?
I think we do. I think it's going to come down to how well Nank can restrict Cherry. If Cherry gets on top all over the ground, I think then we're going to be in massive trouble with their midfield. Because their midfield, they've got some pace, and LDU is a bull. He's very, very hard to tackle. He crashes through packs. We need to be sticking our tackles. If we don't stick our tackles in the midfield, it could potentially get ugly for our defenders.
Yeah, LDU, he's got good speed too. And I don't think we'll go down the path, EJ, of tagging any of their particular players.
Back in a minute.
Yep, no dramas. I don't think we'll go down the path, Grock, of tagging any of their midfielders by any stretch. But it's going to be interesting to see how we go head-to-head. I mean, Taranto, Hopper, Prestia against LDU, Jordy Payne, George Wardlaw, Luke Parker will maybe roll through there as well. Sheez will roll through there too. But I guess where people think we might be able to get them is their defence. It's hard because our forward line is not exactly our strong suit. And this is why I think this week as well, it's important for Bolter to play forward to really try and stretch them and even things up a bit. But Charlie Combin, Toby Pink, and Griffin Logue will obviously have their hands full with Harry Armstrong, Tom Lynch, and Noah Bolter. But I think, again, this week we do need to see Bolter playing forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. I mean...
What was that?
Nothing. I just came in and agreed with whatever you said because I said, sorry. Go ahead, Grock. Sorry.
Combin is a really capable defender. I think he's probably one of the most underrated defenders in the comp right now. He's probably where Callum Wilkie for the Saints was about 2 years ago, where he was doing really well, was just underrated. Combin is very, very good. And I think he'll definitely take Lynch, I think. Pink is the other one. Logue, North Melbourne fans aren't very complimentary of Griffin Logue at the moment. If you check the Big Footy board and the thread on Griffin, he's one of their whipping boys, sort of their Macintosh this year, so to speak. So it's going to be interesting. I do think... The biggest thing for us is to stop their transition from the back line. If we can have Mansell roughing up Sheezel off halfback, get into his head, you know, make him second guess things, I think that will go a long way. But yeah, as Travis said, we are North's grand final. We have been for nearly a decade. They always seem to come out breathing fire against us.
I think Colby McKercher is also another one, EJ, that we have to pay respect to. As the game wore on, his pace and his skills did come to the fore and really sort of helped. They actually got back into the game and were getting quite close to passing the Giants at one point before they put their foot back down. Who would you have made, I don't want to say tagging, but who would you have lining up or looking out for Colby McKercher? Because he is pretty much their main driver off the half back line, it seems.
Oh, well, it's got, if that's, if, I didn't see any of the game. I saw the scores, but I didn't see the game. It'd have to be Ross, wouldn't it? He seems to have been the go-to tagger who will work off the other way. That's the impressive thing about Ross's jobs, where he has put a slows on someone, is he still actually kept getting disposals himself. I can't think of any. Oh, Ross or Hopper, but I prefer Ross.
Yeah.
It depends where McKercher's playing. If McKercher is rolling off half back and pushing into the midfield, I almost wouldn't mind chucking MJ on him and be like, you just follow him everywhere, get involved in the contest at half back, pressure him when he's got the ball. And if you go through the midfield, do what you do, win the ball, do anything, get involved. So I think it'll either be Ross or MJ that'll go to McKercher.
What about our, I forgot to ask at the start, but what do we think our changes might be? I mean, the only one that sticks out for me is, does Trainer come back in? He's had a week off now to freshen up. I'm not sure how niggly the hip was, and or does Steely Green get a look in, but I'm probably less likely to think we'll do that. But does Trainer get a gig? Or any other changes that you see fit?
I'd be tempted to go in unchanged.
I agree. Probably unchanged. I mean, it depends on how filthy Uze is with a couple of the senior players. If we are getting a Trainer in and want him to play wing, could be McIntosh out. But I think that's probably the only one. And it pains me to say it because I love McIntosh, but I mean, it depends on one if we want to get Trainer in. Mac is probably the clearest in, unless we have Green out, which would be stiff, and bring Trainer in as sub.
Yeah, it's well known that I am a card carrying member of the KMac fan club. I think he's been pretty good this year overall, but he absolutely stunk it up on the weekend. I wouldn't be against him having a rest, but if he does have a rest, regardless, I would love him to play the last game against Geelong. I think he deserves to be playing in the last game of the season, because he won't be getting offered another contract.
Yes, as per Nick alluding to, that set to retire, we'll see out the season. There's been a little bit of that bubbling away on the socials. I agree that if that is the case and that is what's happening, then I think no matter what, he definitely deserves to play the last game. You'd almost rather not play him this week so he doesn't get hurt, to not play the last game, if that makes sense, to get a proper send-off at the G. If he is retiring. I actually don't mind the call of that as well. But
highlight of my year, even though we lost a close game to North Melbourne, was actually getting down there to be there at his 200th. He's been a cult favourite of mine for a long time, and that was an absolute highlight of the year for me. So,
his headband's taken a bit of targeting from opposition players over the last few weeks. I know people laughed at the Marshall one, but he actually slucked him in the head a couple of times trying to swipe it. So it was high contact, whereas side bottom actually carefully just removes it with a slight pinch and threw it away.
And then gave it back to him.
Oh, did he give it back to him? Okay, well, that's nice.
Yeah, they were laughing at each other and they thought it was hilarious because it was at the bottom of the pack and, yes, very different. But
there's a bit more malice involved in Rowan Marshall's than there was Steel side bottoms, that's for sure.
If Macca retires, who will be our new whipping boy? Ashley, where do you want me to start?
You've got Sonzi, Ross, Mansell, MJ, the list goes on. Like, we've already got whipping boys ready to step up.
This is an interesting one. I've seen this comment come up a couple of times in regards to our tackles. So we obviously had a pretty low tackle count against the Saints. I think we had 41 to their 80-odd. Now, I do want to say that 15 of those tackles were inside 50, which is a great number, given we average about 8 and have often had 1 or 2. So that's a tremendous increase. I have wondered, though, are we maybe going more towards a corralling type of football rather than a tackling type of game as a plan? And is that working in our eyes, or do we need to change the method? Because I think even during Dimmer's era, we did do some more corralling rather than tackling, but it probably worked or functioned a little bit better, EJ.
Yeah, I would love us to tackle more. But that also goes against one of the things that I've noticed this year, and Grok has noticed it as well, is we've been overcommitting numbers to the contest, and it's leaving holes everywhere, and it drives me up the bloody wall. So I kind of wonder if this low tackling thing is a consequence of people holding their position and not getting sucked. Because even on the weekend, there are a couple of times where we overcommitted, there's space over the top, out the ball goes, and you just put your head in your hands thinking, the last 30 seconds to a minute were really good. Why did you have four contests where you did the right thing, and then all of a sudden, everyone gets sucked in? It's like putting a treat out in front of a dog and expecting it not to bite the treat. The dog can only resist for so long before So maybe it's a consequence of that. They're holding a structure, but I would like us to be better at sticking our tackles.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. That for me, number one is sticking our tackles. But as Jay Tiger said, and I posted this several times on the forum after the game, and not many people understand it, but when an opposition side is taking 144 uncontested marks, that's 144 less opportunities to tackle that player, tackle the ball carrier. So naturally, your tackles are going to be less because you cannot tackle, otherwise you give away a 50. If an opposition side is playing, you know, possession football and just chipping it and chipping it and chipping it, you can't pressure and you can't tackle. It negates it. I think our pressure rating was 145 or 150 over the course of the game, which is absolutely putrid. But we couldn't do anything about it because they were retaining the football. The only answer to stop that is to then go a one-on-one game plan and try and stop them having the uncontested rather than playing the press in the zone. But
I think the uncontested stat was heavily skewed as well. But I reckon that first quarter skewed two or three stat categories because of the amount of ball we were giving them. We tightened up after that, but I think by that stage it was probably too big to make a dent in the differential.
Yeah. Ross Lyon is a boring but very effective coach.
I think that's been his way for a while, hasn't it, though, EJ? He knows people may not like how he gets the job done, but he'll typically find a way to get the job done or get close more often than not to getting the job done, which is all you can kind of ask him to do.
He plays a stifling, suffocating game plan, which is good enough to get teams to finals, but again, it's just not good enough to win. And that he's been sort of a great coach, but he hasn't been an outstanding coach because he hasn't been able to take that next step.
I reckon getting that Fremantle side to a grand final was a pretty outstanding effort.
I thought they had a decent side in 2014.
They had a couple of very, very good top line players. They were he's got two different sides with Zach Dawson to a grand final. That alone, that alone is Hall of Fame shit.
Hall of Fame shit. That's a great call. I don't mind that. I don't mind that. Well, what else? What are some of the final things we want to see us to continue to do on? What day do we play? Saturday, I think it's Saturday it might be. Do we think, to kind of tack on to that, to Jay Tiger's question, do we think the game plan in maybe, let's say, the last 6 weeks has become a bit more clearer with what we're trying to do ball movement-wise? Is it more about just trying to keep executing that at a high level, do we think?
Yeah. Yep. I think I think our defense is pretty much settled now. They know, and I think that's shown in the last 2 or 3 weeks where we've had, you know, Vlosten, Young, Miller, they've all really stood up. So I think that's allowed us to then start trying to implement what our ball movement from the back half is going to look like. And we've seen it over the last couple of weeks, even during the Collingwood game, where we were looking to go inboard a little bit more. We were going longer, we were going quicker, we were going more direct. So I definitely think now that we've established sort of the back half of the ground and what our structure and setup looks. We're now going through the midfield, the transition, and I think early next year is when we'll focus on our forward stuff.
EJ, any more to add to that with what you're wanting to see come Sunday?
No, I just want to see us continue to use the corridor once we've got the transition sorted.
Because yeah, for me, it's just about improving that connection.
Look, I know most people probably know this, but the reason you want to use the corridor is that when you get to the attacking edge of the centre square or the top of the 50, right, if you're in the centre of the ground, you have so much space to kick into. If you're over on one flank or over on another flank, you narrowed your area that that you can deliver to. And being in the corridor, it means that all defenders have to be accountable to when our forwards are moving. So being a team that plays corridor football is really important. That's I don't mind if we turn it over at this stage with skill errors and dumb shit, but I do mind that if we lose our nerve and then turn sideways, which there were a couple of times where we didn't take the kick and the player has gone backwards or whatever. That's what I don't want to see. You want to see forwards and corridor.
I think that's fair enough. And I'd like to see a bit more final third connection with on some of that, because we do so well to create these defensive counter-attack starts and slingshot attacks, whatever you want to call it. And it just must be deflating for the team and the forwards when that last kick really doesn't land or the last handball doesn't land. So you'd love to see them get a bit more reward for effort executing the final piece of that puzzle. And I think if we can do that a couple of times, we'll start to see the confidence grow in the players. I want to see, obviously, we want to see some accurate goal kicking as well. It'd be great for Harry Armstrong to have a bit of a day. I thought, just to backtrack heavily, I thought he looked pretty good later in the game with some nice sort of work up the ground and some contested marks. So he'll hopefully be a bit better for the run again. But yeah, it should be a really interesting game. And it's one that both teams should most definitely be thinking that we can win. And it's a chance to get to 6 wins for the year and to cement North not going above us, which would be great. And yeah, either way, I think we've got some pretty high peaks locked up and ready to go, which is good.
Yep. Speaking of goal kicking, I would like to see 4 multi-goal quarters. I don't want to see another 1 or 2.
Oh, that's a good call. Quarters.
Like, yep. I'm kind of over the 1 or even no goal quarters this year. I think now's the time that we need to start actually putting it on the scoreboard, especially
that's
against
be,
the, a bit of a yeah, weak that, kill. Weak kill.
I agree. I reckon that's going to be a big one for us next year, gents, in terms of things that we need to try and accomplish to show some progression. And I know it seems minor, but I agree with you, Grok. There needs to be no or minimal goalless quarters next year. It's just not. It's not something that should be acceptable with, you know, a list that's got a bit of talent. I know they're young talent, but hopefully we see some more progression next year.
All right. Quick question.
Yes.
I know I'm not encouraging gambling on this show.
Put the house on it.
Yeah. What do you think? What do you think the current odds for the match are?
I think North Melbourne would be favourites.
North go probably $1.40, Richmond $3.
North $1.55, Richmond $2.47.
Seems a bit harsh. Seems a bit harsh.
How is there that big of a gap in the market? I will be having. I'll be putting Richmond into a multi.
Oh, EJ's multi,
because I think they're good value.
But, like, it's going to be, I reckon Ooze is going to rev the boys up going into this match. Obviously, one, we've got their pick, but two, imagine us finishing, like beating them and finishing above them when they were projected to push for finals and many had us not winning a game. Like, the narrative there was they were expected to be, you know, just slightly missing the 8 and us, like, dead last with certainty. And the fact that we're above them right now, they'll use that, I reckon.
Yeah, I think they will. Agree with this, T-Tube. Don't be so Lynch-focused. Give Harry some love. Yeah, don't mind it, don't mind it. But with that all being said and done, what are the final tips, including margin? Chuck them in the chat as well. We'll pop a few up. EJ, what are you going with?
Tigers by 32 points.
Oh, 32. You've gone large.
Yep. No, no. I really think that we set up that we should be really competitive in this game.
Does the Tassie factor impact anything at all? Is it I don't know how blustery it might be or whatever is going to happen down there, but does that play a part at all?
Not even
31 by 31 then.
Yeah.
All right, I like it. Tigers by 32, Grok.
Well, I heard someone early, I saw someone earlier say it was supposed to be 11 and rain. So if that's the case, I'll go Richmond by 16.
Yeah, I'll go Tigers by, I'll say 19. Any 4 points will be a good 4 points, though. And I just think for all the commentary about the pick selections and stuff like that, I still think it's been good to see us still going out there with the intention to win games and trying to instill winning mentality, winning methods, winning ways. Even if we don't get the result, we're still having a crack across four quarters, which I think is the most important thing. So thanks for everybody for putting your tips through in the chat. Thank you to you, EJ and Grok, for jumping on tonight. Appreciate it. Will we do a live this week? Possibly. I'll chat to everybody off air and we'll see if we can maybe do something given the nature of the game with what's on the line. It could be quite fitting to do so.
Thanks, CB.
Yeah. Well, that won't go away anytime soon. But no, thank you to everybody for everyone's love and support. Make sure you get around us on the socials and subscribe on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and wherever else we are, or X, whatever it's called these days. We've got Behind Frenemy Lines tomorrow night. I think it's going to be with Marnie from Kanga TV. She'll be back on. And there's, videos dropping every few days on YouTube, so keep an eye out there. But have a wonderful night, everybody. And until next week, go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.